On this episode of China Unscripted, coronavirus hysteria. Is China's authoritarian model the best way to fight the coronavirus? And how China is twisting the narrative with clever propaganda. Welcome to China Unscripted. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganeshda.
And tonight we are once again sponsored by our sponsor, Path of Cha Tea. Tonight we're drinking it's called Gongfu Lychee Black Tea. Let's have a sip of this. Wow, this tea is really good. Yeah, it has a really nice flavor and aroma too. You can really, lychee is like a fruit very popular in Asia.
When we were talking about how this is, like, I think of lychee as kind of like a stunt flavor in a way because, you know, it's one of the things that people know is from Asia. So a lot of things will be, like Starbucks might have lychee tea.
Yeah. But this is actually very, very aromatic and very tasty.
It does.
It's much better than actual lychee.
What?
Let's not get into this controversy. We have controversies enough ahead of us.
No, Shelley, I don't care. I've never had a fresh lychee that I thought was really good. Although, to be fair, I had kind of a bad first experience with it.
Well, I mean, I grew up eating canned lychees, and I still like them. Yeah. So I'm not sure what your excuse is. But
this
okay.
is going to start a Twitter war.
Tell me about the bad experience.
Well, it was the first time I went to mainland, and I was in Guangzhou, and the tour guide took us to a market, and I think in retrospect it was probably one of those things where like the tour guide gets a kickback for taking you to certain vendors. And it was weird, and then I was surprised and angered by the huge pit in the middle.
How old were you?
I don't know, like 16 or something.
Americans are used to this centuries of genetic modification of fruits, so they have none of their natural qualities and are just loaded, concentrated fructose bombs.
Like seedless watermelon.
Seedless watermelon. My gosh, what has our civilization come up with?
But I mean, you've seen paintings of watermelons from like 300-400 years ago.
Yeah, they were called like stone fruits back in the day. And I think they were used as a source of protein from those horrible, disgusting seeds. I don't know how it got from that to our delicious seedless watermelons.
Well, Chinese people have always known how delicious watermelon seeds were.
Really?
You've never had melon seeds?
No. Why would I eat melon seeds when I could have a steak?
It's like the Chinese equivalent of popcorn or something like that. Or like, you know, pumpkin seeds or something, or sunflower seeds, or people. It's just that kind of like, you play games with your family, you play mahjong with your family, and eat the melon seeds.
But why would I eat sunflower seeds when I could eat a steak?
Salient point.
Thank you. I remember the old Chapel family board night games, just a bowl full of steaks we were chewing on. Those were the days.
I picture you guys as like cavemen. Like the Flintstones.
Meat is a source of concentrated brain power.
Okay. We're not sponsored by meat.
So. No, I just happen to like it. So Bath of Cha, in case you were wondering, has decided to stop sourcing teas and teaware from China temporarily because of the coronavirus. So if you do order anything from them, you can be sure that nothing has come from China during the outbreak. So head over to go.pathofcha.com/unscripted and buy some tea using that link, and you'll be supporting the show, and where we're getting all kinds of great information like Matt's lychee prejudice and my steak fantasies.
Oh, man.
What are we talking about tonight?
Well,
the coronavirus hysteria. Fooled you. I knew what I was talking about. Hey, Shelley, do you know where the word hysteria comes from?
Yes, I do.
You want to tell the audience? I feel it's apropos for you to talk about it.
Because I have a uterus.
What?
I just feel like this is the tension that has just been created here is palpable.
I mean, it's like Matt's doing his nervous laughing.
It's like chewing on a tough steak.
While playing mahjong with your parents.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, hysteria obviously means, like, now it means, you know, overreaction or, like, anxiety or this, you know, yelling, screaming, that kind of thing. But historically, this was thought to be something that only females got, and it was actually considered a disease, like female hysteria, because from the Greek word for the womb. And interestingly, the Greeks actually thought there was something called a wandering womb, like women's uteruses would actually travel through their body.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a disease that like your uterus would just decide to like leave where it should be and
creating
wander
hysteria
around, you know, if you didn't have enough babies or, you know, that kind of thing.
Have you had enough babies, Shelley?
I have not had any babies.
How do we know you're not hysterical?
Oh, you'll know when I'm hysterical.
Oh, gosh.
But actually...
There's the nervous laugh again.
Female hysteria was it was considered a disease until 1952 when the American Psychiatric wow. Association finally removed it from their diagnosis.
You say finally as if that was the right decision.
Yes, I do think it's the right decision. There's not... Like, hysteria was kind of this catch-all... Like, it wasn't really clinically diagnosable. Like, anything could be... Like, things like people misdiagnosed epilepsy as hysteria. Like, for, you know, like, we're talking about not the great, you know, in the 1900s, you know, medicine. Or, you know, everything from, like, you know, maybe your corset was on too tight, so you fainted all the time. That could be hysteria. So people couldn't decide whether... It was like a psychological illness or a physical illness. Like, it just wasn't very useful as an actual medical term. Let's say that.
I'd like to think we have come a bit further in our medical sciences. However, judging by the hysteria surrounding the coronavirus outbreak, I don't know if that's true.
Describe what you mean by hysteria, Chris.
Okay. So there is... this phenomenon happening of basically you have two extremes when people talk about the coronavirus. You have the people who are like, it's nothing, don't worry about it, stop washing your hands like panicked monkeys.
I haven't heard anybody say to stop washing your hands. Have you heard that?
I mean, no.
Okay. Just checking.
And then you have, the media reports that are whipping people up into a frenzy of panic, of hysteria, to the extent that, you know, I heard from my parents that, shout out to Mom and Dad Uncensored, don't give me that look, Shelley, that, like, in their supermarkets, like, all of the Clorox bleach has been cleaned out, there's no more hand sanitizers, toilet paper, like, people are going into hoarding mode, when that is probably not necessary. Or another example, the masks, the N95 viral masks that medical workers need. You know, the U.S. government has said, don't buy those things. Don't hoard them. We need them for medical workers who actually need them. They're actually not even that useful for the average person, and still people go out and hoard.
Well, I actually think the masks have been gone for months because once the coronavirus started spreading in China and in other parts of Asia, people started buying up the masks in the U.S. and shipping them back to China. Saw lots of that happening because there was a huge mask shortage in Wuhan and other places. Like in Hong Kong, a bunch of people had bought masks and sent them to Hong Kong because they weren't getting enough masks. I think that shortage started long before coronavirus actually showed up.
Yeah, but I mean, you still have people trying to hoard them in the States now too, which is new. And yeah, it's people just are panicking, like, oh, like it's affecting the elections. Like people are like, oh, should we cancel rallies? Do we hold rallies?
Biden and Bernie both canceled their Tuesday night rallies.
Really?
Yep. Because they were waiting for the results to come in from the states that voted on Tuesday. And they both announced that they were canceling their rallies for that night in Ohio.
Wait, because of the coronavirus?
Yeah, because of the coronavirus.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I think from a political standpoint, that's probably smart. Because do you really, like, what kind of bad press would you get from your supporters getting infected at one of your rallies, right?
Infected with enthusiasm for the campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, yeah, there is a middle ground that people should have of where this is a serious thing. We need to take necessary precautions, which mainly include washing your hands.
Social distancing.
Well, I never had a problem with that.
Yeah, well, okay. For, you know, people might want to think about whether it's necessary to do non-essential travel, flying around the country, or, you know, try, like, the New York... the New York City government has said things like, try to avoid crowded subways. And then everybody's right. like, that's very helpful. Thank you. Although businesses can do things like try to stagger times so that you're not like having so much of a rush hour.
Or the MTA could run more trains.
We can't even get them to run the trains that they need to run.
That's
true.
But, you know, yeah, so... I mean, I think you're worried about the overreaction. I'm actually a little bit worried about the underreaction.
Oh, yeah?
Because the people who are like, oh, you know, it's just the flu. I even talked to somebody who's pretty recently, she's an older woman, so she's in the, like, at-risk group, really. Mm-hmm. Although she's pretty healthy, but, you know, she was just like, oh, you know, it's like the flu, right? And I was like, no, this causes pneumonia. Like, people can end up in the ICU, especially older people. Like, it's something that, you know, you have to be aware enough to take precautions,
yeah.
especially if you have family members who are older or sick or any of these things. Or, you know, it's not just something where you can just be like, it's no biggie, but should we be shutting down everything? I don't know if it's gotten to that point. You know, a lot of colleges have shut down now. Live classes like Harvard, Columbia, Fordham, Amherst. Like, a lot of these colleges have decided to suspend classes for weeks or possibly longer.
But students are still living on campus, right?
No, they're asked students to leave if they can. And then that's become controversial because some students don't necessarily have somewhere they can go. Like, what if you're an international student?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so on a case-by-case basis, most of these colleges are saying if you need to stay, you can. Faculty and staff are going to be allowed to be on campus, but they just don't want to hold, like, 500-person lectures, you know?
What about Saturday night parties?
Well, that's another thing that people have to kind of decide for themselves, right? Like, I don't think any place has really been quarantined yet outside
of... Is beer pong still safe?
Beer pong was never safe.
I don't think beer pong was... Yeah, just thinking about all the people touching... the ball, and then it...
Where the ball has been.
And then it, you know, you drink it if it gets into the cup.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
Not a good idea.
It's always been gross. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, keg stands, also unhygienic. How many people's mouths have been on that?
I thought the idea was you finish one by yourself.
An entire kegs?
Do not do that, anyone listening. I don't even drink, so follow my example. Yeah, I mean, there is a specter haunting the country, and her name is Corona-chan.
Oh, yeah, I was really... you know, just when you think that people can't get weirder, you learn that somebody has decided to meme the coronavirus by making her, like, the sexy Asian geisha anime thing.
/ demon.
Okay. Okay, don't want to forget about the demon part.
With bat wings.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes there's bat wings.
Yes.
Other times, just a voluptuous chest.
Which I think it's very interesting that people have chosen that, because it shows that they're realizing that, like, in the tradition of Buddhist meditation studies, that, you know, lust is a demon that is endangers you.
Do you think that's what they were going for?
100%.
Okay. Anyway, but, you know, it's kind of like one of these things where there's a catch-22, right? So if you want to be prepared for an epidemic, you have to prepare for it. But, you know, if the preparation works, then it doesn't look like it was that bad, right? Mm-hmm. So if it if you do a good job at preparing and it turns out to not be so bad, then people will be like, oh, that wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. Why did we just go through all that stuff? That was overreaction. But then if you don't prepare enough and an Italy situation happens where they've now quarantined the entire country and they're running out of ICU beds and a lot, you know, a lot of the things that happened in Wuhan are now happening in, like, northern Italy.
But you do see a very different reaction to the coronavirus in places like Taiwan, especially, or the United States versus Italy. And that's very dependent on how a country, how their relations are with China.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, like, if you don't react enough, right? If you don't do enough, yeah, like Italy.
Well, yeah, then, Italy did not do enough, and then, now it's really bad.
Yeah, so
the United States, Taiwan, they have done stuff.
Yeah, and I would say that Taiwan has done the best.
Taiwan has, because they knew from the beginning, don't trust the Chinese Communist Party.
I mean, but, like, you still have, I think, this idea that, oh, maybe, like, we don't want people to panic. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, like, France held this event over the weekend where 3,500 people dressed up as Smurfs.
Okay.
And that's a bad idea for many reasons.
And
but
then
go
we're
on.
Just, like, you know, parading around, like, had this, like, long conga line kind of thing, all as Smurfs and whatever. And I was like, and they were like, you know, despite coronavirus fears, people in France came out to do, and I was like, wow.
It's not like that's a brave thing to do. Like, you know, despite the threat of police tear gassing people, they came out anyway to hold a peaceful rally. It's like, no, despite the threat of the protesters infecting each other with a virus that can't be controlled by any government.
These were Smurfs, not protesters. Just want to make that clear.
What? Then what's the point?
It was fun. You know, they wanted to get the, like, a world record for how many people dressed up as Smurfs at once.
You know, this is the inherent problem with the Guinness Book of World Records, because, like, it encourages people to make records for things for which there should not be records.
Like, the most number of people dressing up as Smurfs in one location. I mean, whatever. If it wasn't during, like, a potential pandemic, go for it.
Yeah. Though I did hear in France they are saying, you know, to stop that traditional French greeting of, like, kissing each other, that they have at least done that. Stop randomly kissing people.
Are they fist bumping?
I don't know what the French have decided to do. But yeah, around the world you see people, like, recommending fist bumps or elbow taps or foot taps.
I actually witnessed two people in my office elbow bumping each other when they met for the first time instead of, you know, instead of shaking hands.
Was there a moment where they, like, were deciding how to greet each other, or did they just instantly straight go
into
it?
No. They were like, hey, nice to meet you. And then they were like, oh, we can't handshake because of the coronavirus. And then one lady stuck out her elbow. And then the other, yeah. These are also, like, women in their 40s or something, which made it also fun.
I like Taiwan president saying when she met with, like, U.S. diplomats and she did, like, the, you know,
the hand and fist.
Hand and fist, the traditional Chinese greeting.
Ancient China knew how to handle viral outbreaks.
Well, I mean,
modern,
like,
China, not so much.
You know, handshaking is a relatively recent. Like, when did people start shaking hands?
I think it came from ancient Greek things. Greek or Roman, like, to show that you were unarmed.
I heard that was like a, like a knight's thing or something, like the unarmed thing.
Maybe they got it from the ancient Greek.
But, like,
or
people
Roman.
Didn't really shake hands, I think, even in polite society until the last couple hundred years, probably. People used a bow.
In the West?
In the West, people used a bow. I mean, I don't know if peasant farmers used to bow to each other, but I'm thinking, like,
the aristocracy.
Yeah, the aristocracy used to bow.
I mean,
and curtsy.
I remember hearing not too long ago, like doctors would go to the morgue and do, like, autopsies and stuff and then deliver babies without washing their hands.
Oh, yeah. There was a... women would die of puerperal fever, mm-hmm. Like childbirth fever. And when it was suggested to the doctors that it was like, because they needed to wash their hands, and like, it was because of this new thing called germs, you know, they were very offended.
The idea that a gentleman could not be dirty.
Or like, no, like, the idea that they could be the ones causing this, like, predominant sickness that would kill women.
And they began to notice this because, like, the rich, fancy, well-to-do hospitals were the ones where all these women were dying, whereas the other, like, poorer hospitals, it was not happening because the doctors were not doing autopsies and stuff. There was not that cross-contamination. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's just from doing autopsies. It was... Actually, I don't know about that. But, like, I don't think it's necessary from doing autopsies. You could, let's say, one...
Or handle a dead body.
Didn't come from dead bodies. One woman has an infection, right? You deliver that baby. It's on your hands. You're not washing your hands. Or just from... Like, a lot of things could be contaminating your hands.
Or if you're trying to catch the uterus as it's wandering around.
Well, you know, like, older listeners may remember that before the 1980s or so, you go to the dentist and they didn't wear gloves.
Oh, yes. It wasn't until AIDS happened that that people really started wearing gloves for things like that. Yeah.
And so, like, there's a general level of hygienic awareness, I think, in today's society that's much better than it was, you know, a couple generations ago, and especially during the 1918 Spanish flu outbreak.
I mean, I've now learned that I shouldn't be touching my face, which I do all the time.
What if somebody else wants to touch your face?
Only if they've washed their hands or sanitized them first.
So you'd let anyone touch your face as long as their hands were clean?
No.
This is weird. Hey, I heard in the old days in China when they did acupuncture, they reused needles. Now, I've heard that sometimes they would like put the needles in like flames to sterilize it, but I've also heard that you know, because they don't want to stick a cold needle into a person, the doctor would just pop it in its mouth to warm it up a little bit before sticking it in.
Yeah, that's considerate, right? You know.
Yeah.
Just don't think about what's in your mouth.
Lychee fruits.
Actually, was that a problem? If it was a problem, you'd think that they're... who knows? Okay. Anyway. Oh, actually, that kind of reminds me on a slightly different topic. But speaking of traditional Chinese medicine, did you see the whole thing about the WHO, the World Health Organization, on their website? One of the things that they say is that you shouldn't treat coronavirus with herbal remedies. But in the Chinese version of their website, it doesn't say that.
Like, that entire line is just missing.
That line is missing. And somebody did this experiment where they used a VPN to, like, make it look like they were looking at the WHO website in English, but from China. And that line was also missing in the English. Yeah.
So, if you don't know, the WHO, World Health Organization, is massively corrupt and bowing over backwards to appease China, praising how they're handling the virus. That's actually something we should talk about, how China's handling the virus, how people are saying that's the way to do things. And
yeah, but, like, the World Health Organization is definitely saying that China did a great job and the rest of the world should pay attention and follow that. But, you know, they're also obviously doing very politically beholden things like, oh, well, you know, in English you shouldn't take herbal remedies, but it's okay to do that in Chinese because the Chinese government has been pushing under Xi Jinping traditional Chinese medicine as not just a cure for the coronavirus, but in general, like, they see it as like an expression of Chinese soft power, kind of like how they wanted to use Qigong in the 80s, but it didn't really work out that way. But, like, they're trying to use traditional Chinese medicine as, like, a propaganda tool for the Chinese Communist Party. And the World Health Organization is apparently happy to do that as well.
Ah, WHO. I am glad to see that on lately on videos we've made about the coronavirus, they've switched from doing a WHO banner, YouTube forcing a WHO banner beneath the videos, to now changing it to a CDC.
I wonder if that's actually U.S. specific, though.
I do wonder. I'll need to check that with a VPN, probably.
But
like Surfshark.
Like Surfshark.
Because the Google has for a while now been, you know, suggesting CDC.
Oh, yeah?
In the U.S., yeah.
Well, that's good, because I heard Google was working with the WHO to promote to fight against quote-unquote disinformation or misinformation, and I had assumed the banners for the WHO were part of that.
No, I mean, very possibly, but for some reason on YouTube, all videos were getting WHO, and Google, if you were searching U.S. Google, you were getting CDC.
Yeah. But speaking of, like, not reacting properly to the coronavirus, Shelley, do you think calling it the Wuhan virus is that racist? Twitter must know the answer.
Do we really have to go into this? Because I'm pretty sure there's like a circle of Twitter hell that's just like the Groundhog Day of getting trapped in this argument about whether Wuhan virus or China virus is racist. And I've been stuck in this purgatory for a few days now.
Why? Why did you put yourself
there? I didn't do it, but just like it shows up all the time in my feed. I'm not getting involved in that argument, which I think, you know, is just like an example of Twitter magnifying something that's ultimately kind of minor in the scope of things and making it into this huge political showdown.
Well, I know you actually have some interesting takes on the whole coronavirus and racism thing. Do you want to talk about that?
But before we do that, let me just see what YouTube does. Okay, so... I use Surfshark on my phone to log into YouTube from France.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a Smurf banner?
No, it's World Health Organization.
Ah.
I could, you know, try to test it with more countries, but what I actually suggest is that you, the listener, try it out using Surfshark. But yeah, no. So the rest of the I'm assuming that other countries are not going to have the United States Centers for Disease Control banner underneath their YouTube videos.
I am glad that they're at least changing it for the U.S., though.
Yeah, I wonder what was behind that decision.
I mean, possibly now
science,
that they...
perhaps?
Well, I was going to say...
I don't think their decision was based on science.
My guess is now that the coronavirus is affecting the U.S. more, that the CDC would have better information for the U.S. than the WHO.
I would hope. I remember going on the site, this was like a week or two ago, and like the data on like U.S. deaths or infections was like several days behind.
From the WHO?
From the CDC.
Yeah, the CDC is doing this thing where they're only updating their data once a day at 4 p.m., so their numbers tend to lag.
Mm.
And they also did a thing where they stopped reporting the total number of tests being done in the U.S. because so many tests now are being done from like their state health departments are doing their own tests, or private companies are now helping with the testing. So the CDC was like, well, we don't necessarily know the correct number anymore. So they stopped reporting that as well. There have been some issues with the CDC.
Mm, great. Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, let's panic. We're all going to die. There we go. Take back my stance about hysteria.
I mean, I think, you know, when we talked to Laura Garrett, all of us came out of that podcast feeling a little bit depressed, right?
Yeah, yeah, the whole, like, if 70% of the world gets infected and it's you use the lower of the mortality rates, 1%, that's still tens of millions of people. But then I had to question, like, the fundamental premise of, like, will 70% of the world really get infected?
We, you know, that's a huge unknown. And the more that we people do to mitigate the infection, the less likely that that will happen. You know, I think 70% is if everybody just does nothing.
Carries on kissing.
Yeah, kisses strangers.
Stop touching each other's faces. That's really the key.
But, yeah, that's... Like, Matt, do you want to talk about that that graph that was going around?
Oh, well, yeah, the idea is that, like, let's say you can think of a... This is harder to describe in a podcast, but basically, like, you can think of a bell curve where, you know, you have a spike in cases and then eventually it goes away, right? So how high is the spike, like the peak of the outbreak? What you want to do is flatten that bell curve so that the peak of the outbreak is lower. That might mean that it extends longer over time. In other words, it's like a shallower, flatter curve, meaning that instead of you know, by doing different measures to mitigate the virus, you might lengthen the amount of time that it's circulating, but you've made the peak lower. And the advantage of making the peak lower is that, you know, the healthcare system only has so much capacity, right? So if you have only the capacity to treat, say, 5,000 people simultaneously in a given area, then if you flatten that curve, you can actually end up treating more people. So you'll have a lower mortality rate, for example.
So basically, you don't want all 5,000 people coming into the hospital at once.
Right.
They can't handle it as well as, like, if you had a few hundred people for months.
Exactly. Yeah. So, even if you can not reduce the total number of infections over the course of the virus's cycle, you'll still be better off trying to keep it at bay for as long as possible.
That's interesting, and that goes back to the idea of don't panic. Our favorite Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Don't panic.
Admonishment.
But take some precautions.
And always bring a towel.
That's well, true.
Actually, speaking of towels.
Launder your towels like twice a week.
Yes. Hand towels are good places to breed germs.
That's why you should just do what doctors do and just hold your hands up in the air and let them air dry.
Yeah, hold your hands in the air as if you don't care.
Well, no, you hold them in the air because you do care.
That's actually right. Paper towels are better for drying your hands than...
But worse for the environment, Shelley. Do you want us to all die in climate catastrophe because there's no more rainforest because we've turned them all into paper towels? Is that what you want?
You know,
I'm not
actually,
hysterical. You're hysterical.
I was going to say, reforestation in the U.S. is actually happening on
North
a...
North America has done pretty well with reforestation.
We also have, like, record low greenhouse gases.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is the irony is that big corporations like 3M are, like, they do a lot of deforestation, but then they reforest even more because the value of their company is based on the predictions for sustainability over, like, the next century. And so they realize that if they plant more trees, then, like, they have better prospects for their economic future and therefore their current stock value. So it's in the corporate interest to actually have more trees. I know it's kind of a weird reality, but that is in fact one reason for reforestation. But also, just there's been a lot of campaigns by environmental groups to plant more trees, and that's been somewhat successful as well. I mean, people don't like, you know, gross areas with no trees.
That's actually one of the things that I remember from being in America versus China. It's just being like, there were no trees. There's so much space and there's so many green places in America.
Oh, in China there was no trees.
Yeah, there are no trees.
Right. Like if you go to like a public park in China,
they're mostly
concrete, like paved.
Yeah, they're mostly paved. Like, but I don't know if it's like this now, but it was like that when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Matt, I think you made the point to me not too long ago about how, unlike the Cultural Revolution, they had songs about, you know, struggling against heaven and earth and fighting against nature's chopping down a mountain.
Yeah.
So
China has really led the world in environmental destruction in so many ways.
Which is why we need to work with them to fight climate change.
I don't understand why environmentalists don't look at countries like which countries are causing the most environmental destruction and then criticize that. Because if they did that, they would say China.
Well, I think it's because it's much easier to criticize countries like the U.S. because
they don't arrest you here in the
U.S.
Well,
also, I mean, if you criticize China from the U.S. or wherever, you're not going to get arrested. But the idea is that you can't actually change the Chinese Communist Party's stand towards environmentalism.
Right. But unfortunately, we also haven't been able to change the Communist Party's stance by, you know, working with them over the last 20 years. And in fact,
Matt, they're still a developing country, okay?
Oh my gosh.
They need time. We got all this time to pollute during like the Industrial Revolution or whatever. So
I hate that argument so much. But here's the more important argument. And this frustrates me that people don't realize this. We, like, over the last 20 years since we let China join the World Trade Organization, I mean, it was mainly America that pushed this. we've been exporting a lot of manufacturing jobs to China. Oh, get it made in China, it's cheaper. But like the typical product takes, like, it's dirtier to produce that exact same thing in China than it would be to produce it in America, because Chinese factories are typically more likely to be powered by coal. They have like worse environmental regulation, or where they do have it, it's not properly enforced because there's too much corruption, etc., and they're polluting the rivers. And so, like, if you want to make, you know, 1,000 t-shirts, if you make them in the U.S., it will be a cleaner process than making them in China. So the overall way to reduce global pollution, and whether it's you know, carbon emissions, air pollution, water pollution, soil pollution, whatever it is, like, we as a planet are better off making those products in a place like America or in many European countries than making them in developing countries like China, but more specifically countries that don't care about the environment.
Well, hey, the coronavirus, I remember reading this. The coronavirus, China shut down a lot of factories. Their greenhouse gas emissions plummeted. So they're on it.
I'm pretty sure they're about to restart all of those factories.
Yeah. I mean, of course, China, like, the Communist Party pledges these, you know, climate goals and such, but they have zero intention of actually meeting them. Or even if certain officials may have an intention of doing it, they don't have the ability to really actually do that. And I kind of get the sense that they don't care as long as it doesn't actually hurt them politically.
Well, I think that they will do certain things, but not at the expense of things like economic growth.
Right, because they can't sacrifice economic growth just to help the environment, because what about their own political power?
I mean, I think you're going to see, especially now, like a real ramp up in manufacturing and things in China to try to make up for the whole first 3 months of the year where everything was shut down.
And guess what's the fastest, cheapest way to power factories?
Coal.
Solar
power.
Yeah, I mean China has been building some nuclear plants, which, I mean, you can debate the merits and problems with that. But certainly from an air pollution perspective, nuclear is cleaner. But, like, those take a long time to build, and they
made
also...
Made in China nuclear power plants?
Yeah. No, I mean, so there's a lot of potential issues with those as well. But at any rate, like, nuclear power, it's very hard to scale that up in a quick way. But coal, like, you have a coal power plant, and you can just use more coal and produce more power up to a much larger capacity than they're typically run at.
Hey, guys, remember when we were talking about the coronavirus?
I tried to bring it back with the greenhouse gas thing.
And I completely derailed it.
Well, that's I feel like is Matt needs to write an episode for China Uncensored about this whole environmental stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see, like, the thing is, it just upsets me because when I was a teenager, I worked for this group called the Campaign to Save the Environment, and I cared a lot about the environment.
Did they save the environment?
Well,
I mean, if they did, they'd have to stop campaigning. So.
Actually, it's against their interest to save the planet, because then they have to shut down.
Yeah. I mean, there were actually a lot of problems with the organization that I worked for, and I started to realize this over the course of working there, and later I pointed them out, and then they fired me. But this is to say, like, I do care about the planet, and I'm frustrated by, like, you know, climate change activists going after America instead of going after China, for example. I'm frustrated about talk about, you know, all this pollution and deforestation that's happening when really the solution is a political solution in China.
I mean, that's much harder to accomplish.
Okay, so it's difficult, but if you wanna live on a planet that is, like, you know, has clean air, water, and soil. All right, let's set carbon emissions aside for a second because there's a lot of controversy on that. But, like, everyone wants clean air, water, and soil, right? And if you want those things, you need to deal with the Chinese Communist Party wrecking those things.
Well,
China, you know, they're involved in deforesting places like Malaysia and Indonesia, and, like, and like nobody
building dams.
Yeah, and nobody's paying. Yeah, China is killing all these rivers in Southeast Asia by building these dams, and they're like wrecking the environment, and like people aren't paying attention to it. It's like, oh, we need to work with China on carbon emissions. Like, really, that's not the urgent thing for the billion people who are living in that area.
Well, I think, you know, we've interviewed people about what's happening in places like Malaysia and Cambodia and, with the Belt and Road and things like that. Like the...
Things in Africa, the Belt and Road.
The problems with the deforestation and pollution are just being exported.
Right. And it's these, like, impoverished and vulnerable people in, you know, India and Burma and Laos and Thailand and Vietnam, that they're all suffering because of really bad, almost malicious environmental decisions by the Chinese Communist Party. And so, like, people that care about how the environmental impact on the world's most vulnerable people really should be looking at this and not looking at America. And, you know, you can criticize some of the things America has done, and yeah, there's some validity to that, but to tackle the problem on a massive scale, you really have to look at China, because they're by such like an order of magnitude much worse than the developed countries.
Also, things like overfishing.
Overfishing, yes. Yeah. And they're hurting, like, the indigenous populations through overfishing, you know. And I'm saying this, and I know I sound like some far lefty by saying, but, like I think people on the far left and the far right and everywhere in between should be able to agree that, like, whether it's hurting the indigenous fishermen or, like, you know, taking American jobs, like these are all problems created by the Communist Party, and we should come together and, you know, stand up to the world's cruelest, most polluting authoritarian regime.
Now, when you say you get frustrated by these environmental activists who criticize the U.S. but not China, are you thinking of anyone in particular?
Don't make him do that.
No, that's not. And I think, you know, like there's a kind of you know, herd mentality for, you know, all, you know, political groups and ideological groups. So, you know, what individuals say is typically influenced by the direction of the larger movement.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so that's why I'm not going to blame any particular individual. I don't think that's fair.
Well, back to the coronavirus, I think one of the things we're seeing now is as the coronavirus starts, or at least the first wave of the coronavirus starts to die down in mainland China, we're seeing a ramp up of the Chinese Communist Party messaging, taking credit for, you know, how well they did with stopping the coronavirus.
While also now blaming the coronavirus spread on the United States.
Yeah, I mean, that's been... I first saw that a few weeks ago with some kind of, like... There have been these kind of conspiracy theories that the U.S. actually infected China with the coronavirus during these military exercises, like joint... Like, there was, like, a military competition that happened in Wuhan last year. So Whoa. The idea was that, like, the U.S. military infected. And it's been kind of this low-level conspiracy theory that's been, you know, spreading all over WeChat and stuff like that. So it's the equivalent of, you know, your uncle posting these something crazy on Facebook or whatever. But the Chinese state-run media have been... you know, nudging that a little bit, like mentioning that maybe the origin of the coronavirus wasn't in China.
I think, you know, the aliens did it on 9/11.
Or, you know, saying things like, there's been this like mistranslated headline where the headline English is like U.S. Discovers first coronavirus case of unknown origin, which meant that it was the first indication that there might be community spread in the U.S. because they couldn't directly tie it to somebody who had been overseas. But that was mistranslated in Chinese to be like, oh, U.S. discovers that they're the origin of the coronavirus outbreak, or something like that. And, you know, there was a Japanese report that also basically mistranslated some CDC stuff, U.S. CDC stuff, that made it seem like the U.S. was responsible for the coronavirus or like some kind of stuff. And then Chinese state-run media was eager to jump on that. Because then you can have a Japanese media were saying that the U.S.
Yes,
is
the trusted Japanese.
Yeah. Also funny, right? But yeah, so.
Just for context, it's funny because the Chinese Communist Party has, you know, tried to raise a lot of anti-Japanese sentiment.
I am going to assume that anyone listening to a China Unscripted podcast probably has some inkling of
I'm just trying to,
when this is taken out of context by the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, of course, if they're going to take it out of context, I'll just take that one clip.
It won't matter your explanation.
That's why this stuff is disgraceful anti-China garbage, like China Daily said.
About us.
Well, yeah, so then, you know, criticizing U.S. media for criticizing China while now criticizing the U.S., you know. Like, I saw a line in the Global Times that was like, you know, many local media are criticizing the U.S. government's response to the coronavirus for not being fast enough or whatever. So, you know, it's not the Chinese state-run media criticizing the U.S. It's local media in the U.S., you know. That same Global Times article also mentioned Dr. Li Wenliang. Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
The whistleblower doctor who tried to warn his colleagues that there was this mysterious SARS-like, you know, pneumonia, and then got, you know, brought into the police department and forced to sign a confession, basically, and then died of the coronavirus. And then everybody was very upset at his death. Last week, the Chinese Communist Party gave him a commendation, like, along with a few hundred other you know, Wuhan doctors and nurses and medical staff. Like, he was, you know, given like some kind of title, like individual of, you know, like, I forget what the translation is exactly, but basically, like, oh, he was commended for his actions.
So they're taking their screw up and trying to awkwardly say, no, we're
like,
great.
We recognize this guy for doing the right thing, you know?
He really stood up to a lot of pressure from the government. I mean, hey.
Local officials who, you know, they're gone now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the trick, right? In China, like, you want to blame the local officials and not blame the higher officials.
I mean, and people do believe that, like, there was a central government official who was touring Wuhan last week, and people were shouting out of their balconies things like, it's all fake, because they wanted the central government official to know that the Wuhan officials were putting on a show for them. But it was like they believed that, like, if the central government official knew that it was a sham, that, you know, would somehow change things.
Yeah, it's not a top-down thing.
Yeah, but, you know.
Yeah.
Although, speaking of top-down, Xi Jinping was in Wuhan this week. Which
was
he? Yes, yeah, so.
I saw the photo of him, quote-unquote, visiting the hospital.
Well, to be fair to Xi Jinping, he was physically in the city of Wuhan with his N95 mask on.
Which doesn't do much if you're not a medical professional, but
whatever. I mean, but anyway, people, like, the whole mask thing is actually, medical professionals in Asia say different things than medical professionals in the West about masks.
All right, well, anyway, yeah. So Xi Jinping was in Wuhan.
And he was, you know, wearing his mask and then talking to patients at, like, a hospital who had the coronavirus via a television screen. So he wasn't at the hospital, he was speaking to them, you know, via teleconference.
In a totally separate room that just happened to also be in Wuhan.
Well,
and then he also was standing like 9 feet away from the TV monitor, which was kind of funny.
Well, it's better for your eyes to not be right up to the screen.
I see.
I can't necessarily blame the leader of a country for not being in a room with people who are infected.
Well, so I agree with you on that. Like, you don't want the leader of your country getting infected. And it's especially concerning in China because there's no, like, leadership transition process.
Oh,
you have president
died
for life. But the problem here is that Xi Jinping wants to take the, you know, propaganda credit for going to Wuhan, and but then he's like essentially faking that process. So if he wants to not visit coronavirus patients, I totally get that. I wouldn't want the leader of any country to go do that. But they shouldn't also like make it seem like they're there with the patients when they're not.
I mean, I think it was clear that he was talking to them through a TV screen, but the comical thing about it was the distance that he was from the TV monitor. But
he could have done it from Beijing.
Yeah, he could have done it from Beijing. But I think him being in Wuhan symbolically means that the CCP, they're signaling that the outbreak is over, or the worst of the outbreak is over.
I think that's actually really dangerous. Because, like, once the Chinese Communist Party has, like, created the new narrative of it's reached the peak and it's going down, if for whatever reason it starts to go back up again, the Communist Party is going to be very hesitant to change that narrative,
right,
and then openly recognize that, oh, things are getting worse.
Wouldn't that just be like the perfect irony? Like, it spread because they said there's nothing happening, and then they say, oh, it's fixed, it's done, and then that makes it even worse.
Like, I mean, it's a possibility, because when people go back to work, if it really hasn't stopped spreading, like, when you have people going back and opening up again and factories restarting and schools restarting, there could be a chance of like a second wave or a third wave of infections.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're still not, like, even despite this, I think there's still not that much of a public health consciousness in mainland China compared to places like Taiwan or the United States. So that's like, if people in mainland don't really step up their own game in terms of individual personal hygiene, then it's going to be really challenging. And I think it's probably, you know, it's gotten better over the years, but it's still not quite where the more developed countries are. That's not a case just in mainland China. That's generally in developed countries. There's less of a consciousness about hygiene than in more developed countries. So, but unfortunately, like, you know, you just have to step up your game when that's the case.
I think, you know, now is when the Chinese Communist Party is going to try to take advantage of the fact that there's the coronavirus seems to be spreading more in Western countries now or outside China than inside China. So they're going to kind of ramp up this narrative that, like, they did it the right way and the world should learn from China and China did so great in, you know, containing the virus and all this stuff.
And the sad thing is there are Western media also picking up that narrative.
Yeah. I mean, there actually is one province of China that's done a really great job of containing the coronavirus.
Before we talk about that, I want to talk about Western media picking up that narrative.
Yeah, right.
Because I think there are a couple things happening. One is, well, I think it's important to look at Chinese state-run media propaganda, not just in Chinese, but also in English, because that signals what they want an international audience to see. Mm-hmm. And while it's easy to kind of dismiss some of this propaganda as like, oh my God, well, that's really transparent. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really heavy-handed, and, like, you know, anybody could see through that. What's interesting is to see what the message is, like what the narrative that they're putting forth is, and then to see how that gets echoed in other media, either through, like, surrogates. Like, the New York Times had posted an op-ed from a Chinese official last week.
Thank you, New York Times.
Where he was making that, you know, same argument. But also, you know, you have these opinion pieces, and I think part of it is that people, like, Western, not just media organizations, but I think, you know, pundits, opinion people, they tend to see China as like a reflection of the West and whatever. Like, instead of being like a place that, you know, we should look at separately, like, it becomes a reflection of like, oh, well, they're doing better than us, so we should criticize the US and praise China. Or, like, there's this idea that, like, we can only see what's happening in China as, like, compared to what's happening in the U.S. or other Western countries.
Like, it's always about us.
Yeah, it's always about us. So
it's always about U.S. Now, that's why I'm a great pundit.
You are a good pundit, Chris. But when you do that, what you do is there's a lot of room for this like CCP narrative stuff to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Because we like, you know, media organizations, you like provocative opinions, right? Or counterintuitive things, or these things that will be controversial and get people to look at the article. So a lot of these things are susceptible to the CCP narratives. And it's really interesting to see how those narratives kind of get carried through, either through supporters of the Chinese Communist Party, or people kind of like are like, oh, I'm being balanced. I'm not a China hawk. You know, I like.
Yeah. So anytime you are hearing that China's authoritarian model of dealing with the coronavirus is much better than like Taiwan or the United States.
They don't bring up Taiwan. It doesn't. But it's often something like, oh, you know, can liberal democracies rise to the challenge? And, you know,
and it started because their authoritarian system covered it up.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's why they're pushing so hard right now, because now is the time to make people forget about how this all started.
So can we talk about that one province of China that's done a great job?
Yeah, let's talk about that province of China that's not getting... I actually have seen like maybe a couple news reports, but many of them from Taiwanese media.
Yes, so let's talk about Taiwan, which for all of you Taiwanese listeners who are now deeply offended, I don't actually mean that Taiwan is a province of China. So Taiwan, interestingly, started... like when the first reports of pneumonia and the strange new pneumonia were submitted to the WHO, like before the WHO was like, this is a problem. But once the things were started to be submitted, Taiwan was like, okay, this is on our radar. Now we're going to start checking flights that come in from Wuhan.
Which is interesting, and because talk about when that was.
December 31st. So this is a full 3 weeks before China officially acknowledged that there was an outbreak.
This is about the same time that Dr. Li Wenliang got brought into the police station for talking about
this. This was also at least a month before the World Health Organization mentioned a global health crisis.
Yes, and so, like, actually, I remember because we went to Taiwan on, I think we landed on, like, January 7th or 6th or something. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we were in the Taipei airport, they had the area for screening for fever. And, like, I just happened to notice, like, oh, that's interesting, but I didn't really think about it.
I think they've had that, like, that's a permanent thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so they started on December 31st. They stepped up their game less than a week later with even more measures to deal with people coming in from Wuhan. And, like...
And at the time, Wuhan is reporting, like, on the 31st, I think they had maybe 12 people or something. Like, it was, like, reported as a very contained, local thing that was... everybody who had been exposed to a particular wet market in China, in Wuhan. Yeah. So
and Taiwan's like, you know what? We had SARS in 2003. We have an inkling that this could be a thing that's happening.
They got SARS because, again, the Chinese Communist Party tried to cover it up, and it spread to Taiwan.
And so, so Taiwan's democratically elected and not authoritarian government basically started measures that were cautious. At the time may have seemed overcautious, but of course in retrospect they weren't. And basically they started putting on various levels of travel restriction. And this is a big deal because you have, you know, more than 800,000 Taiwanese people who work in mainland China. You've got over 2 million visitors from mainland China in Taiwan every year. Like, there's a lot of connection there, and they're only, you know, 80 plus miles away from mainland China. And so under normal circumstances, you would expect Taiwan to get, you know, over 1,000 infections by
and
this point.
This is also, you know, peak Chinese New Year travel season. So a lot of, like, Chinese airlines were actually increasing flights between Taiwan and China at the time. Yeah,
but so Taiwan's National Health Organization—I forget the exact name—but
it was NHCC.
Yeah, they basically stepped up their game and they did it really early.
That was NHCC is a specific, like, that's a specific epidemic response,
right? But, like, you know, at all levels of the Taiwan government, they were basically aware of the issue, And but what they were doing was politically very dangerous in a certain sense, because the Communist Party is offended when you say, oh, well, there's a virus that, you know, could be coming from China. We have to restrict travel. And so, but Taiwan, like, it's like the Chinese Communist Party already hates Taiwan's government so much that, like, they don't care. And in particular, the power in party, the DPP, in power, you know, in
actually
early
this was
January
in the...
and also after the election in
yeah,
January.
This was, like, in the ramp up to the election, too.
Right, but, like, this particular political party has also been particularly unwilling to compromise with the Chinese Communist Party. So they're like, you know, this kind of, that I don't care if you're mad at me, this is what we're going to do for public health. And they kind of, you know, like everywhere from like the president to like, you know, local governments were kind of like ready to step up their game. And there's also a generally high public consciousness about this kind of thing in Taiwan.
Versus especially places like Italy or South Korea that are like involved and have close relations with China. Italy just joined the Belt and Road. China says travel bans are an overreaction. Italy doesn't do one.
Not just China. The WHO said travel bans are an overreaction.
Yeah. And so then like a country like Italy doesn't do it. And now they are struggling.
They have more than 9,000 infections in Italy.
They've 16 million are on lockdown.
The whole country.
You shouldn't trust the Chinese Communist Party. But I also think what's important about what you're saying, Matt, is it's not just how early Taiwan responded to the coronavirus, but how they did it. They did not use the authoritarian method that China uses, where China puts Hubei province with like 58 million people under total lockdown. How did they do it in Taiwan? Did they lock down the country?
They did not lock down the country. They basically integrated their travel database with their national health insurance database. And they used that to evaluate individual risks. And if people were above a certain level of risk, they told them to self-quarantine. And like, it sucks if the government tells you have to stay home and be in quarantine. It definitely sucks for those individuals, but it's still much less authoritarian than locking down an entire city where the vast majority of the people there are okay. And so, yes, there were some top-down quarantining measures, absolutely.
But also very transparent, constant like public health communication from the government.
And it's like, here's how we're doing it, here's why we're doing it, here's what you can do to stay safe, and then you won't have to be quarantined.
And I love the fact, this is Taiwan, so everything involves a cute mascot. They decided to use a Shiba Inu. Not like a cartoon Shiba Inu, but an actual Shiba Inu dog as their kind of coronavirus epidemic mascot.
Wait, you don't think Corona-chan is a cute mascot?
Well, you know, when we were in the like the night markets in Taiwan, it's like if you go to the beef stand, it's like a cow like eating beef. It's like, or like a dumpling eating dumplings.
I'm not sure what you're saying about the dog here, Matt.
Well,
the dog eats coronavirus.
Right. So it should be the coronavirus should be the mascot of the
you're
coronavirus.
Right.
That was my point.
Oh, man.
A cute version of the coronavirus.
I'm not sure that's the right messaging. You don't want to think the coronavirus is cute.
Hmm.
That's true. But I mean, like, I'm creeped out by a cow eating beef.
I did see a coronavirus piñata in Mexico.
Yeah, that was a little culturally insensitive, but
it was wearing like a pointy hat.
It had like a Fu Manchu mustache,
and it had really? Like there are two. Okay, so there was like a mascot guy that was dancing as part of some carnival, and then there was a piñata, and the piñata had like a crown on it because it's a coronavirus, and it had like a Fu Manchu like figure with like slit eyes and the pointy hat and the mustache like face on it, and then it had bats on the side. There was a lot going on.
So is calling it the Wuhan virus, is that racist?
I mean, I wouldn't say that the Mexican piñata was not racist. Actually, interestingly, in Taiwan, they do call it the Wuhan coronavirus, Wuhan pneumonia.
But they can't be racist because, you know, it's Taiwan.
Well, I mean, I think the racism thing is kind of like, it's not worth it to fight over whether calling it the Wuhan virus is racist. I think it plays into the CCP's whole narrative where they were trying to blame racism. As you know, there were all these, after the Wall Street Journal article came out that said sick man of Asia and the Wall Street Journal reporters got kicked out, like there were dozens of articles. I mean, the Chinese state run media had a field day with that headline that I think was probably just somebody thought they were being clever and didn't really understand like how the CCP had used that phrase for decades as a propaganda tool to make people feel offended and like they were being looked down on and you know, that it was racist.
I think actually the what the CCP has done is push this idea that like because there have been some individual cases of racist responses, such as, you know, the pinata with the Fu Manchu or like other things.
There have been people who have been beaten up. Yes. So there have actually been serious.
There's been many of them and they're real. But what you have is like when the governments respond, like even when the Trump administration, you know, implemented travel bans, it was actually done in like a pretty measured way. They're like, we're going to restrict flights from mainland China. We're going to restrict entries of Chinese nationals. But if the Chinese people are American citizens, we can have them come and they can go through the quarantine system.
Not just Chinese people who are American citizens. If you come from Wuhan, you were going to be mandatory quarantine.
So it wasn't about race. It was about the country of origin or where you've been in the last 14 days.
About this virus from Wuhan, this Wuhan virus.
Right. No, but my point is that, like, even when the Trump administration implemented it, like, it wasn't done based on race. It was done based on where you had been on your trip. And like, for example, if you were an ethnically Chinese person who, you know, lived in Taiwan and Republic, it wasn't affected because Taiwan wasn't under the travel restriction. And so to call that response racist is just simply inaccurate if you look at the way the government actually implemented it. And so what the Chinese state-run media and their narrative is that the response to the coronavirus is racist, when in fact they're intentionally conflating, you know, some individual instances of racism with the larger response that governments are doing, which is by and large not racist.
Not just the government response, but like the media response. Any kind of criticism of what the Chinese Communist Party had done was racist or anti-China or whatever. So they're conflating things and conflating things and conflating things until you get to that step, right, where they can defend anything by accusing you of racism or being anti-China or anything like that. Like, I definitely remember a phrase in many of these state-run media articles where they were saying things like, you know, what's even worse than the virus is racism.
Ooh.
Like, racism is the true disease. It's the true, you know. So it just, you know, having this whole, again, I think it's kind of the whole, like, we can only look at ourselves thing. Like, we're the center of everything issue. Yes. Where, like, the debate about whether the Wuhan virus or coronavirus or whatever is racist is just us becoming absorbed in our own political, cultural fights. Right.
And the Communist Party takes advantage of that.
Yeah, so I think it's, I don't care if you think the Wuhan virus is racist or not. I just think that specifically using that is just falling into the Communist Party's trap in a way.
Just shut up and wash your hands.
I think that the whole, like, the Communist Party just manipulates us so well because we just don't see what they're doing behind the surface. And, you know, a lot of well-intentioned people are... Actually, I think some of this Wuhan virus stuff is people kind of ham-handedly trying to point at where the virus came from as a way of saying the Chinese government's response. Like, I think Pompeo is using it because he's specifically trying to say, okay, the Chinese government is responsible for it getting to this point. Mm-hmm. But that nuance is completely lost.
Right. And that's still not racist.
No, I don't think that's racist in itself, but then... You know, it just devolves in this whole, and then like
In politics, one should not use nuance.
Well, I think also some people do mean it in a racist way, that's the problem, too, where some people are being racist, some people aren't. And some people are like, this is, it just becomes, again, us really fighting our cultural, political fights about political correctness or whatever. Whereas actual Chinese people or Taiwanese people are like, what's going on?
Right. And also, like, none of those fights actually help us solve the immediate problem, which is that COVID-19 is spreading and we need to take various types of action to mitigate that spread.
Yeah.
Wash your hands.
I mean, I think, you know, when the WHO had this whole thing about, like, we don't want to stigmatize. We want to have this name that doesn't stick. To be fair to the WHO, they came up with that thing in 2015. So it wasn't just a response to the current coronavirus outbreak. But they sure were much more worried about it regarding this outbreak than previous things. Like, yeah. You know, I don't know if Zika was prior to 2015, but that is, the Zika virus is named after a river. Ebola's, you know, all these places that were named after physical locations or...
I don't know where Zika or Ebola
Ebola are. Mountain. Come visit.
It's a river in Africa.
Yeah. A river that I'm never going to.
Apparently, you know, yeah. So, I mean, were you going to go to Wuhan, though?
I wasn't planning on
it. No. So, like, there's a bunch of nuanced, complicated stuff going in there, but... Mainly, I think it's a stupid thing to argue over because it just falls into the CCP's trap.
And I think that's a wonderful place to end on. Actually, wash your hands. That's the place to end on. So once again, I just want to thank our sponsors, Path of Cha. If you want to support the show, visit go.pathofcha.com/unscripted and buy some tea or teaware. You'll support the show and have some great tea. So thanks for listening. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley John.
And I'm Matt Gnaizda.
Talk to you next time. Wash your hands.
Are we going to, like, sterilize these microphones?
Were you licking your microphone?
No, but I was, you know, definitely within 6 feet of my microphone.
Well, that's why each one is labeled Chris, Shelley, Matt.
Yeah, you could fist bump your microphone.
There we go.
Don't. That would not be good for the audio. I apologize for you listening now.
You know, don't panic, but take precautions.
And bring a towel.
Wash your hands.